The second half of Edouard Glissant's Poetics of Relation is probably less well known than the opening pages, especially the pages around the question of the abyss, the middle passage, and the shoreline, as well as his appropriation of Gilles Deleuze and Félix Guattari's notions of nomad and rhizome. Those reflections that he has in the early part of the book on the middle passage and the shoreline, especially the relationship between that meditation and his theorization of the nomad and the rhizome as models for subjectivity in a Caribbean context, have really dominated so much of commentary on Glissant's work. This is also something I would say is a feature of my own work on Glissant that I have focused really disproportionately, if I'm honest, really disproportionately on those particular passages and pages. But the second half of the book is extremely interesting. I think the second half of the book shows this sort of intersection between Glissant the poet and Glissant the nonfiction or critical essay writer, insofar as his poetry, and I mean it's true of a lot of poetry, it's not his, but his poetry is so elusive and works with such associative logic. And we see this in his nonfiction, I think, especially in the second half of the Poetics of Relation. What I mean by that is that Glissant very much presupposes a reading of the people he mentions, whether it's Victor Segalen or any of these other writers, where he's tracking them in relation to this notion of Caribbeanness and this notion of the rhizome and of the unicity of the Caribbean as an archipelagic model of thinking. And he measures them against that and measures them by that, allowing him to draw, say, theories of the exotic back into this more productive space of the archipelago, rather than the exotic being inextricably linked, as it so often is, and rightly so, to histories of colonialism and missionary versions of conquest and occupation. Because something like the exotic is deployed in a missionary colonial context as a way of saying, like, look, these people, they have something that's strange and opaque about them. So opacity is a part of this that is exotic. It's outside the norm. It's outside what we can comprehend. But in that acknowledgement of something that lays outside of comprehension, as we know, it's typically a prelude to a follow-up, not only conversation, but imperial project of rectifying and correcting that lying outside the norm to draw them inside that norm. And in that way, I think this notion of the exotic is a first-level encounter that is then followed by everything that Fanon describes in Black Skin, White Masks in terms of conquest, in terms of assimilation, and in terms of colonial hegemony that operates at every level of the body and the psyche. So for me, what's interesting is the way that very idea is reworked by Glissant, very much against the wishes and desires and aspirations of the author under discussion, and reintegrates it into this system of opacity, this system of the archipelagic, where instead of thinking about the exotic as a prelude to colonial hegemony, he thinks about something like the exotic in terms of what it offers to thinking. And what it offers to thinking is, for me, really an absolutely essential phrase. This, what it offers to thinking, is to say that the exotic is only a beginning point in thinking. That is, it is something with which the thinker works. A fragment, to draw on the imagery from Walcott's epic memory essay. But here, that notion of a fragment becomes the thing that allows other kinds of meaning, other forms of meaning, to reassemble themselves and to be integrated into not an indigenous form of thought, right? Not a mode of thinking that is what he calls continental, right, that is linked to a single root, but one root among the many that can be lived from. That is, that the exotic might name something vital about subjectivity, about the world, about communal and political and cultural organization, but only as one element. And that exotic, if understood in it on the model of opacity rather than the model of colonial hegemony, it becomes something that gives so much to think and gives so much to be thought about. I especially like reading this in connection with Antonio Benitez Rojo's The Repeating Island, the introductory piece that we read for class. And that introductory piece is so committed to the same thing that is in the opening chapters of Poetics of Relation, that is an appropriation of Deleuze and Guattari's thought in a Caribbean context. I think that Glissant and Benitez Rojo are two amazingly interesting readers that way, because what they do is they take what is for Deleuze and Guattari notions of nomad, notions of rhizome, notions of multiple roots rather than a single root, this notion of the machine. All of those things are taken by Deleuze and Guattari as an alternative model for social, political, and cultural organization. Those ideas are very much generated out of a post-May 1968 moment in France. May 1968 being this moment of revolutionary uprising among young people and workers. And for Deleuze and Guattari, you know, really they, I think, are thinking about student protests. And this feeling that everything could be different tomorrow, right? A real revolutionary moment, that the world was at the point of radical change. And so they offered this vision of, like, what if we organized our world in a completely different way? But what Glissant and Antonio Benitez Rojo are after is this notion that what Deleuze and Guattari describe is not an alternative vision of a future, of a different kind of world, but a description of the world of the Caribbean as it always has been. That is, what they describe is an archipelago that is nevertheless a collection, in this case, of islands that are organized under one name and one concept, the Caribbean. And that is really important for both Benitez Rojo and Glissant, this notion of the archipelagic, because it's where you get all this proliferation of difference, different colonial histories, different languages, different cultural norms and habits. And yet there is a unity or an identity across all of this difference. And how to think those two things at once is very much Benitez Rojo's project, and it's a project that follows through with so much that Glissant himself toys with and plays with, but never quite gets the rigor and depth that you find in Benitez Rojo. And so Benitez Rojo, for me, is this really critical supplement for Glissant's writing, as I think Glissant's writing is a really important supplement for Benitez Rojo. And all of it comes down to really the title of Benitez Rojo's book, The Repeating Island. This idea that there is a collection of islands erratically scattered across the Caribbean Sea. They're different sizes, they have different histories, and so forth. Yet it is a hemisphere, it is a region, it does have a single name. And so what's interesting to me is that in the title is the singular island, and then repeating, which is a word for multiplicity, that is multiple sites, one island. So what is the one island that is repeated across islands? Because the repetition of the islands is a repetition that produces nothing but difference, right? Whether it's Spanish to French to English, and that difference in terms of colonial histories or the Dutch, but also that repetition of difference that says at each point, this is the Caribbean, this is a Caribbean island. And so being able to think difference and identity at the same time is the challenge of The Repeating Island, but it's also the challenge, of course, of Poetics of Relation. In fact, it is really the repeating island is a phrase that helps us understand or explicate this notion of relation in Glissant. That relation is about repetition, but repetition that produces difference. But again, that repetition of difference also produces a really important sense of sameness. So thinking all of these things at the same time is really the paradox or the aporia that lies at the heart of thinking about the Caribbean as an intellectual space that is both unified and different. In thinking about unity and difference, also, what I think is important that both Glissant and Benitez Rojo disclose for us is that this notion of difference is not a uniform or orderly sense of difference. That's why the Caribbean archipelago is so important, because the islands are different sizes and shapes and have different locations and different weather patterns, right? So, and you know, all the things about language and history. But all of those differences are the reminder that this is not repetition that produces difference that has a kind of uniformity across its difference, but rather difference that is really radical difference that doesn't share some similar or common root, yet again, in the end, is some form of identity. And being able to think those two things, which are contradictory, at the same time, again, that's the paradox of this word Caribbeanness, or just the word Caribbean. This is partly why Glissant is so fixated in the second half, parts of the second half of Poetics of Relation, on this notion of chaos. And chaos functions so centrally in the repeating island. What they have in mind is chaos in the sense of microphysics, right? And that in microphysics or theoretical physics, you have this notion of chaos, which is at the microphysical level, erratic movements that cannot be predicted, right? Something that, again, we see in a slightly different kind of conversation and slightly different frame in Wilson Harris's notion of the quantum imagination. But that notion of erratic or errant, as, you know, to use Glissant's term from the opening of the book, this notion of errant or erratic movement that nevertheless doesn't destabilize at the macro level, always destabilizing at the micro level. And the fact that those two things exist at one and the same time is one of the paradoxes of our physical universe, right? And so if it's a paradox of our physical universe, it's, in that way, I think it's not outlandish or strange for Glissant to say this is a feature of Caribbean world making, that we do make worlds in the Caribbean out of chaos, right? And that chaos creates an identity that's stable in some way, to be Martinican, to be Jamaican, to be Bajan, but also that identity is never fixed, it's never settled, and it's never not subject to radical revision and change. The migratory patterns of the islands, right? The shifting, political, cultural, and economic tides of globalization. All of these things have such globalization here, largely of information and culture, rather than globalization as a neoliberal economic phenomenon. Although that's important here too. But this notion of globalization at the level of culture, right, puts the Caribbean in this place of constant upheaval and radical change, because what it means to be introduced to these global points of contact inside the Caribbean is to be subject to chaos, but a chaos, again, that only is always part of remaking an identity and revising an identity rather than overcoming it, right? Rather than surpassing or assimilating in the sense of a total digestion of an outside element in order to make it one and the same. Right. So really that radical sense of disruption and intervention and errantry, but never giving up this notion of identity. So errantry and identity at one and the same time. I really love this part of Glissant's work, because I think it It does a lot of things. First, it's really at the heart of what I call, and this is my term, of what I call the Afro-postmodern. This notion that you could have chaos and order at the same time, that you could have errantry and identity at the same time, that you could have differentiation and difference without uniformity across that difference, but that in no point are we giving up this idea that identities mean something, that they're worth, you know, protecting. I mean, Glissant talks explicitly about that when he critiques this notion of comprehension or comprendre, right? This notion of seizure. And for me, and this is the last thing I'll say, what I find so interesting about Glissant's notion of chaos and his commitment to opacity and protection of identities from absorption into a globalized sense of sameness is that Glissant is not only reflecting on what something like what the Caribbean's history and its future might mean and how to come up with something like a normative framework for keeping or maintaining its integrity. He absolutely is doing that, and that's absolutely crucial. But he's also offering what we could just call an ethics of culture or an ethics of the aesthetic, to ask about how can we be responsible in our contact with alterity? How can we encounter otherness, perhaps otherness that appears to us as exotic, and handle that sense of the exotic or of exoticism without rendering what is so other to us an object for consumption, but rather maintain a respectful relation, right, that does not absorb and consume, but also doesn't keep firm distance, but is instead, you know, this moment of allowing ourselves to be open to chaos, to the introduction of chaos that can come from this encounter with a radical outside, with a radical other, with a sense of the exotic that remains opaque yet also has a deep affect and effect on us. And thinking that is, for me, this really important, and I think it's an essay or even a book to be written out of Glissant. I mean, we could draw as well on Benitez Rojo at the sort of ontological and epistemological levels. But in terms of the ethical level, there's really a long project to be written on what Glissant has to say about what we've come to call, and more in popular circles, but, you know, there are intellectual questions at the heart of it, but what we call cultural appropriation. Because I think cultural appropriation and the criticism of that, especially the way it's so viral in social media circles, it's wielded as a deep form of critique and confrontation. I really like how Glissant's encounter with cultural difference operates at a different level, right? And you can say, you know, higher, lower, or adjacent, right? But we'll just say, and in a different register, maybe that's a better way to put it. He operates in this different register where, for him, one of the lessons of the Caribbean is that openness to contact and to the transformative effects of radical alterity, radical otherness, has made the Caribbean what it is a site or an opportunity or an occasion for radical reform, radical change, and the energy and vitality that comes with that. That is, that difference doesn't come to destroy worlds, right? That's the imperial model of the exotic. That's the imperial model of radical alterity. If we get away from this notion of an imperial model of radical alterity, instead to this ethics of radical alterity that Glissant is opening up here, that ethics is guided by a fundamental conviction that radical otherness, I mean, this sounds banal, but it makes us better. It makes us more insightful. It makes our world richer and more complicated and more complex in all good ways. And so Glissant then, for me, ends up doing in this big story about the Caribbean something, or I should say a big story about this small place, the Caribbean, ends up doing a small story about the Caribbean that's about the biggest place of all, the globe. A global sense of contact. But a global sense of contact that has such a deep connection to the atrocities of history that it can never be thought or imagined as an encounter in a global context that is naive, or that, and therefore that doesn't build in some deep and fundamental senses of protection, because we have to have that fundamental sense of protection. That's the lesson of history. But we can't have, for Glissant, this notion of protection of our own unicity and our own cultural formation. We can't protect that to the point of losing the vitality of what contact with otherness actually does to us and what it has done historically to creating a completely unique and singular sense of a people. Right? The Caribbean is not just a place on a map, it's a group of people across centuries who have a unique sense of identity that Glissant and Benitez Rojo are trying to document that gives us a lesson. And it's a lesson for how to be a different kind of cultural citizen in an age of obligation. This is something that I think is absolutely central to the second half of Poetics of Relation and Glissant's work broadly, but it's something that really lies underappreciated, in part because his challenge to us is to think without cultural nationalism, to think without nationalism at all. And I think in the end, that relationship between cultural nationalism and this notion of a single root and all the problems that come with it, it's the final horizon of liberatory thinking. It's the hardest one to overcome because there is so much that cultural nationalism and nationalisms of all kind promise us: defense, offense, calcification of identity. But for Glissant, none of this actually works as a poetics, and that a poetics, right, that sense in which poets and artists have a different relationship to otherness. That relationship ought to not just be a side concern, right, where we have a you know, various forms of nationalism, but then a non-nationalist idea of culture or aspects of our culture, but instead to take that lesson of anti-nationalism and culture and cultural practices and move that to all other aspects of life and start to think, how does our world assemble itself and look different if we take the fecundity, the productivity, the ability to reproduce new things, produce and reproduce new things in contact with radical alterity? What does it do to our world when we take that as a lesson for the totality of our relations to self, to other, to nation, to people, to world?